Blog Talk Radio.
Well, good evening. My name is Felton Wooten, and I am the creator of the Quality of Life series, Aging Gracefully. And tonight we have Kareem Strong. Kareem, are you with us?
Yes, I am.
All right. Thank you, Kareem, for joining us. And tonight, this is an important topic because my passion, as well as Kareem's passion, is to help people navigate the healthcare system, elder care planning, and to age gracefully. It's important that adult children, as well as seniors, think about what they want their life to look like. I've been involved in long-term care over 40 years, and I see people who have come in and they plan well, and I've seen people who haven't. So this is the fifth series in a 10-part series, and tonight's subject is financial planning for elder care and long-term care. And most people don't know that on a minimum, just in a nursing home, it's a minimum cost of about $80,000 a year. So, Kareem, would you share with our listening audience, how did you get involved in senior care and elder care?
All right. Well, to be honest with you, it was actually kind of an accident. I graduated college and was working for a bank, and my sister, who is a dietitian, contacted me and said, you know, hey, I really think you would do well in this position as a discharge planner or a social worker at a nursing home. You know, you're very knowledgeable. You're very passionate about what you do. I really think you should apply. So I did. I wound up getting the job. And then as I was going through the position, I began to notice that there was a lot of gaps in understanding what people thought they had versus what they actually have. A lot of the times they wait until the last minute, you know, until something has actually happened to begin to understand their benefits. And so I began to retain all of that information. And then actually when I made the transition to long-term care ombudsman, that just really allowed me to, you know, everything that I had absorbed previously, and then still learning and taking seminars to really turn that around and broadcast that to the community, so that they can prepare themselves for the inevitable, which is getting older.
And Kareem, would you explain exactly what an ombudsman is?
Sure. So an ombudsman is a Swedish term, and it simply means advocate. And so my job is to be an advocate for residents who reside in long-term care facilities. That would be skilled nursing, adult care homes, and family care homes. Adult care homes are commonly referred to as assisted living facilities, and family care homes are commonly referred to as group homes. But either way, I deal with my general population are seniors 55 and up, and my job is to assist them in whatever matters they may encounter while they're in the facility. A major portion of my job is elder abuse awareness, making the community aware of what abuse is, the different types of abuse that take place, and simply how to report it. As well as what we call technical assistance, and that is when someone calls my office and says, hey, I have X, Y, and Z going on. Can you help me either understand my benefits, navigate through my benefits, help me and my parents or my family members to find placement? We are having issues with Medicaid. We're having issues with Medicare. You know, how can you help us? And I generally try to go out of my way to assist everyone in ultimately getting some type of understanding or getting an actual answer to the questions that they have. Not to say that I have all the answers to the questions, but I can definitely point them in the right direction if I need to.
And that helps us navigate into the next subject. In this whole saga of planning, when you're looking at your life and anything could happen, you could walk out your front door, fall down the steps, go into a hospital, and then you need long-term care to get you back home. But that could cost, in a year's period of time, $80,000 or more. So, Kareem, you mentioned Medicaid, because people can either pay privately or there are other sources. Would you explain what Medicaid is and what Medicare is?
Sure. So Medicare, a lot of the times when I speak with a client, they will say, well, I have good insurance, I have Medicare, or I have Blue Cross Blue Shield, or they have some type of commercial insurance. That insurance is what we would call acute care insurance. And for all intents and purposes, I want you to think of it as this. I walked outside, I tripped and fell, and this insurance paid for me to put a Band-Aid, for the hospital to put a Band-Aid on my leg, or it paid for me to go to my doctor. That Medicare, Blue Cross Blue Shield, Humana, AARP, those coverage benefits are nothing in the long term. So the whole purpose of that coverage and the Medicare and all of those other acute care providers is to simply get you better within a very short period of time, and then you go back home. So you break your wrist, you have wrist surgery. If you're in the hospital for a couple of days, you may have to do some weeks of therapy, but the ultimate goal is for you to return back home. There's nothing stopping you from going back home, and you're progressing through the therapeutic program. That is generally what Medicare covers, and your other acute care, like I said, Blue Cross Blue Shield, Humana, AARP, Aetna, they're going to all be your acute care providers. When you transition into a long-term care arena, those providers generally only provide what is called a rehabilitation portion. So under Medicare, every patient that has just traditional Medicare is entitled to up to 100 days of skilled nursing care. That's contingent upon a skill being present throughout the entire 100 days. So that could be physical therapy, occupational or speech therapy, or some type of nursing skill. Those are going to be covered under your acute care insurance. And once you hit that 100-day maximum benefit, your insurance is no longer going to cover that portion of benefits for you. So once you're at the 100 days under Medicare, day 101, you're going to flip to what's called a private pay status. And so that's where we encounter that residents are not, or the community isn't aware. That, oh, man, my 100 days is up. What happens next? That's where Medicaid kicks in. So there's two options. Well, there's three options for long-term care. You can have long-term care insurance, which I would recommend for people. It can be a little expensive, but I also explain to people that helps you to determine the quality of life that you want when you get older. So, yes, you may have to pay, a higher premium per month, but in the event that you need it, it pays you back pretty rapidly. So there's long-term care insurance, and then there's Medicaid. And Medicaid is the benefit that's allowed to people that are under a certain income level. So for skilled nursing specifically, there is no monthly income requirement. There's no cap. So as long as you ultimately are making less than the cost of living for that facility. So most facilities are $200, anywhere from $200 and up per day. So if you're looking at $200 a day times 30 days, unless you're making around $6,000 a month, then you were probably going to fall in that boat of needing Medicaid. And under Medicaid, like I said, with skilled nursing, there's no income requirement per month. However, there is an asset requirement, and this asset requirement remains consistent from skilled nursing, adult care home, and family care home. You can't have, as a single person, you can't have more than $2,000 worth of tangible assets. Now, I won't go into the nitty-gritty of Medicaid because every situation is going to be significantly different. If you're a married couple, you're entitled to certain things. You're entitled to a home site. You're entitled to a vehicle. Things of that nature. If you're married, you're entitled to, that vehicle, and you're also entitled to a home site, as well as a single person. But generally speaking, your income for there's no income requirement, but your assets have to be spun down. And by spun down, I mean if I'm a single person and I have saved all of my life, and I have $300,000 saved in the bank for retirement. But then I end up sick and I end up long-term care. Well, before Medicaid will pay anything towards my bill, I have to spend down whatever's in the bank to at a minimum $2,000. Excuse me, at a maximum of $2,000. So I have to spend all of that money down, and that money has to go directly towards my care and to pay for my medical bills that I may have accumulated throughout the way. Medicaid is the payer of last resort. It will not pay until you have exhausted all of your resources. If you sell your house while you're under Medicaid and you make a profit of $20,000, you have to pay that $20,000 into Medicaid or into wherever you're receiving care. The next step down from skilled nursing Medicaid is going to be your assisted living Medicaid. There's two income requirements here. For the general public, just a normal person that is aging and needs assistance and goes into a regular assisted living facility, their income must be under $1,228. And that is very strict. If the person makes $1,229 per month, they are not eligible for Medicaid. There's no services that will be provided to them under the state benefit. And then for a special care unit, so a special care unit is for someone who has a primary diagnosis of dementia or some form of dementia, and they are in need of a secure unit, which is called a memory care unit. Their income requirement is $1,561. So, again, for the state benefit, for adult care homes and for family care homes, you're looking at $1,228 or $1,561, depending on the unit. And for skilled nursing, there's no income requirement, but all of the facilities that we're discussing, skilled nursing, adult care home, and family care home, all three of them have asset requirements that and we'll go on a single person, that a single person cannot have more than $2,000 worth of tangible assets. And that puts a lot of things into question because, you know, we try to save for the future. And, you know, we have our 401k and we have our retirement that we've set up. You know, what happens to that money? Do we end up, you know, spinning it down? As Felton was explaining, you know, it's $80,000 a year for long-term care. So if I had $300,000 saved up in the bank, that's only going to pay for roughly 3.5 years of care for myself. What happens if I outlive those 3.5 years? Then the person flips under Medicaid. So there's a big difference between Medicare and Medicaid. And again, just to kind of recap, Medicare is very temporary. You have a lot of coverage, but those coverage benefits are temporary. They're not a long-term source of care. And then you have Medicaid, which actually provides a long-term benefit, but it is the payer of last resort, and all of your assets have to be spun down before Medicaid will kick in.
Well, that certainly is one of the things I always say, and again, our show is the Quality of Life series, aging gracefully. And I always like to say to people, we often think about desserts, and desserts sometimes foods that make us feel good, but when you spell desserts backwards, it's stressed. So I think what you've shared with us, people could either have a pretty stressed life if they don't do any good planning, because if they've worked hard and saved money, within a matter of 3 or 4 years, they would have to exhaust all of that if they would need any care.
Absolutely.
Again, we have Kareem.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Go ahead.
I wanted to share with our audience, we have Kareem Strong, who is a regional ombudsman. And I also want to just, we have some callers on the line, and I want to give them an opportunity to ask a question if they would like. The first person I'll go to is area code 347-265-2. This area code 347, I'm going to click in, and if you have a question or comment, if you don't mind sharing. All right. 347 area code. Is there anything you'd like to say or ask? Okay, I guess not. And we have a caller from the 910 area code. Do you have a question or comment? Okay. Well, I just wanted to give some of our callers who had been on the line for a while to have an opportunity to ask a question if they'd like. So, Kareem, what should a person do, I guess, in preparing their estate in relation to potential long-term care issues?
Okay. In terms of preparation, and I'll be honest with you, whenever I got into this field, one of the major things that I noticed was that, again, the lack of planning and a lack of transparency to at least someone who knows what's going on in the home. And that kind of translates even back to my parents. Because, you know, I would, for Medicaid, you have to supply a lot of documents. So Medicaid has a 5-year look back window. So it looks back over the last 5 years to determine, are there any assets that have been transferred that are going to raise a flag? So if you transferred $10,000 out of your name into your child's bank account, that's going to throw a red flag. So you have to provide how many ever accounts you have. If you have 17 bank accounts, you have to provide 5 years of bank statements for those accounts. You also have to provide any information on your home, if you own your home, if you own your car, if you have a life insurance policy, any of that information, you need to have that available for someone. What commonly happens is you have a family that's admitted, and you have someone that is attempting to locate all of this stuff. And generally the person to whom they're trying to locate the information for, they're not able to give them any information. They may not be alert and oriented at the time. So what I recommend to everyone is, number one, I would say once you get to around the age 50, you need to go ahead and set aside like someone, like a power of attorney, that you have a conversation with and you're transparent about your assets. You know, I have a life insurance policy. It is this amount. I'm going to keep it here. You know, keeping your files so that your family's not having to request all of that information from the headquarters of the life insurance company, who is very reluctant to let that information go. I also recommend, if you own a home, if you own property, and it really just depends on how you want your end of life to go. And I'll kind of give you the two scenarios. If you own a house, and this is a house that has been passed down from generation to generation, or you want to pass it to another generation, then my recommendation is you need to get it out of your name. Okay, so you can easily change the deed to your child's name or whomever's name, but you can also get lifetime rights to the house. Lifetime rights means that the person cannot kick you out of the home. So, I'll give you my example of my parents. I own my parents' home. It is in my name. They have lifetime rights. I can't kick them out of the home. I cannot sell the house. I cannot rent the house. So long as they are both living, they have to agree to anything that takes place to that home. That is what that's what the lifetime rights clause dictates. So whenever I got into long-term care, they were about 53. I sat and I had a conversation. I said, I need to know what money you guys have set aside for retirement. I need to know all of this information, and I need to know what you want me to do with it. Is this money that you're setting aside that you want to, like, give to your children, or is this money that you're saving up that you want it to go towards your care? Because there's a difference. Your children running off with your $200,000, while you're in a nursing home, versus your children investing that $200,000 in your care, is going to ultimately play back on your quality of life. And so I recommend that you, like I said, get the major assets out of your name. If you want to pass them along, what happens under Medicaid is if let's say you're a single person or you're married, whatever, and you own a home, and your spouse goes into a nursing home or to a facility, you sign over stating that once the last person, so if it's your spouse, and then let's say you get sick and you go into the nursing home as well, and the house is then empty, no one who owns the home is living in the home because both owners are in a facility or have passed away, that the state can come after your home for any money that they've paid out in your bills. So if your home is $200,000, go ahead. Sorry.
Okay. I think we got a question.
Sure.
This is from area code 312, and the first three numbers are 786. Let me see. They just indicated.
Hello, gentlemen. How are you?
Just fine.
Doing
you have
well.
A question.
This is Denise. Yes, I have a question. It's actually a two-part question, and it's kind of two different topics as well. But my first question is that once I get to a point where I live down my savings and I have to click over to Medicare, will I notice a difference in my quality of health care services? In other words, if I'm in one type of facility, if I click over to Medicaid, would I have to change my facility? And my second question is, what are the benefits of a reverse mortgage?
Okay. So your quality of life is going to be contingent upon what the specific facility that you're in. So if you're paying, let's say you have long-term care insurance or you're going off of your savings account and you're paying per month, you're going to be in generally a private room with those amenities. And your facility may or may not accept Medicaid. Okay. So if you're in a facility and they accept private and Medicaid, then you're fine, because what will happen is once you've exhausted your resources as private pay, they would then move you out of that private room or whatever room you're in, and they would move you into what is a semi-private room because Medicaid only pays for semi-private. So they would move you into a semi-private room. In the event that that facility does not have a room available under Medicaid to accommodate you, then they would move you attempt to relocate you in working with you and your family, hopefully, to move you into a facility that's going to be able to meet your needs. Overall quality of care, ideally, there should be no change in quality of care once you come off of Medicaid or come off of private pay onto Medicaid, so long as you're in the same facility, okay? So if you go from private pay on one side of the building to Medicaid, the continuity of services should still be the same. The major thing is going to be, like, I have facilities here in Cumberland County that they are strictly private pay. Well, the amenities that those facilities have are significantly different. For instance, those residents are able to order food as if they're ordering it from a restaurant. And they have wait staff, so those staff wait on them hand and foot, whereas in another facility, they have a menu, and this is what their options are, and they have an alternative, and that's it. Whereas the other facility, like I said, the private pay facility, they have more amenities to allow them that if you don't want fish or hamburger, you actually can order something that's cooked to order for you. Those amenities are going to be limited when you begin to switch into a facility that is that accepts Medicaid as a primary payer source.
Okay.
And then
okay.
As far as your reverse mortgage, I'm not 100% familiar with reverse mortgages because I don't do a ton of financial advising. I do know the basic concept of at whatever point your mortgage begins to pay you, but then you sell the home. As long as you own the rights to the home, it is counted as an asset. I do know that.
Okay, well, thank you. I appreciate it.
Yep, you're more than
all right. Thank you. Kareem, we do have another question. Let me get to
absolutely.
This person. All right. This person is area code 347. First three numbers are 265. And again, we are on Think Big Radio. Do you have a question or comment? area code 347. So, Kareem, let me ask a question as it relates to what you've shared so far. So, also, we have sometimes farmers who have land, and a lot of times farmers are not very wealthy people. How does a farm impact the ability to receive Medicaid if a person needs long-term care?
Okay. So under Medicaid, you're entitled to a home and the home site that the home sits on. So a lot of the times, and I'm not sure of the actual, like, square footage maximum, but a lot of the times the issue is that, you know, someone has 17 acres, but the acres are not all connected together. There's 17 split acres. So the house is on property, and then maybe up the road is where their property begins. Well, the issue is going to come in that that property, if it's an income-producing property, they can still have it, but the income from the property, so let's say there's crops on the property, and the crops produce an income every year. Well, that money has to go as it is counted as revenue for the resident and must be paid into the facility. In preparation for that, and that's actually a really good question because my grandparents were farmers, and when they turned 50, I specifically remember making various trips to their house because they were signing over property. And so what they did at that time was they signed over their property to, they have nine children, they signed over square footage to all nine children. And so when they passed away, they still had their house. They still had all of their farmland, and it was operational, but they were in a nursing home because they were able to sign all of that stuff out of their name. And then it was 25 years later that they actually became ill and were able to get services under Medicaid. I also have heard that if you have a business account and you have that business listed as like a LLC, a limited liability company, and you have that and the property's not in your name, the property is in the name of your business, then that also becomes an exclusion because then there's other people involved in the business. But if it's just, you know, Kareem Strong's farm and it's not an LLC and that's money that I'm using to sustain myself and I'm not listed as an LLC or incorporated, then at that point they're going to look at that as an individual asset for myself, and they're going to look at the income that it's producing, and they're going to want to know, they're going to want to obviously liquidate those assets. And that's extremely hard because I've had residents that were under Medicaid or were attempting to get Medicaid, and they had property, but the property wouldn't sell. They had like a home and then across the street. And it's not just your farmland. If you have any type of property that was willed to you, so when you go through Medicaid, they run the deeds. So if your parents or your family members left you property in another state, that's going to show up in their records. And so, you know, again, you're kind of having to look at the big picture of saying, okay, you know, did my parents leave me anything? Has anything been left to me outside of what I own here? And what else is out there? Because that can also throw a big monkey wrench into planning, especially for your family, because sometimes your children don't know that, you know, your great-great-grandparents left you an acre of property, 12 states over, and now they're trying to get Medicaid for you, and they're going to be denied that Medicaid because they're going to show that you have two property sites.
All right. Again, we're on Think Big Radio, and caller from area code 312. First three numbers are 339. Do you have a question or comment? All right. The caller from 312. Here you go. All right. Kareem, as we are, again, discussing this whole journey, what are your final thoughts and what should we expect? Are there going to be changes in the time period of moving assets out of your names, or just what are your thoughts?
My thoughts on the entire, I guess, kind of overall is that it's going to be essential to plan. You need to pull somebody aside that you trust, hopefully a child or a family member. Let them know what assets you have. Let them know where you keep a copy of those assets, so that in the event that you are going to need any type of care, they can access them and with ease. So that, because a lot of the times when you go through like a life insurance policy, they're not going to work with anybody but the person to whom the name of the policy is in, and they're only going to mail it. And it could take them two to three months to mail those benefits out to anyone. So it's really, if you have a copy of a statement, set that stuff aside, at least one copy of the statement. If you get your bank statement, kind of just set them aside so that you can, you can pull a copy of those. Again, I would encourage you to look up long-term care insurance. Long-term care insurance can keep you out of a nursing home. It could, it can put care in your home. The services that we're talking about now are going to be more of, institutionalized settings, whereas long-term care insurance opens up other doors for the individual to actually say, I can pay, $300 a day, and instead of giving that to the nursing home, my long-term care insurance policy gives me that benefit per day. I can pay for someone to come in my home and help me where I need. So kind of as just, like I said, a final wrap-up, be very aware of what you're doing when you transfer assets. If your health is declining at this point or you have questionable health, then it's best that you not move any assets because there is a sanction period. If you move $100,000 out of your name, yes, go ahead.
Okay. We got one quick caller. We've got just a few seconds left. You're a caller from 312.
Oh, yes. Hello. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Oh, great. My name's Ken Blake. I'm out of Chicago. Most of you might know me as Big, one of the founders, along with Felton Wooten, for the ThinkBigRadio.com show. Felton, I'd like to definitely thank you for putting together this 12-part series. And Mr. Strong, I have a question for you. I know that we're kind of running out of time. Two questions. One, would you be able to come on again and discuss some of these things or some of the things that you couldn't get out in this short session today?
Absolutely.
Great. Okay. And, one thing that I'd like for you to touch on really quickly is how do you approach your elderly parents who may be, for a better term, stubborn when it comes to wanting to share this type of information with you? Do you have any thing that's worked for you in the past or worked for some of your clients so that you can actually get them to sit down and take note, because it's not only our future but the futures of our children's as well?
Mm-hmm. Honestly, that's a great question, and it's 100% individualized to whoever they're going to try to release that information to. I encourage, if there is a family member that has a really good connection with that individual that they maybe rely and trust on, then I would say by all means have that conversation with them. If there's any family members that like go to their doctor's appointments with them or are very aware of what's going on with their health, they may be able to kind of tie it in, to if their health is declining, or, if they're beginning to have diagnoses, if there's a new diagnosis, let's say it's, a type of cancer or, something along those lines that could potentially be terminal, to have that, that would be a great way to segue into having that conversation. There's also, sometimes when you, I'm kind of blunt. So I just sat on my parents and was like, do you guys have a living will? Yes or no, and in this, can I see it? Not that I want to know, in terms of where your assets are going to go in terms of estate planning, but I want to know what you want in terms of long-term care. Do you want to be kept alive? That kind of stuff. And then we were kind of able to segue into that conversation of, well, what do you want in terms of your assets? What do you guys own? This kind of stuff, because they know that someone is not, that I'm knowledgeable on the topic. Sometimes it takes family members bringing their family member into my office to discuss, you know, kind of generally what's going on, kind of like we're doing now, so that the person understands that, you know, my child isn't trying to, you know, come after my assets. They really are trying to help me and you know, plan for the future. And sometimes they need to maybe go to an attorney. We have here in North Carolina, we have North Carolina elder attorneys. And we actually have North Carolina Legal Aid, and they can assist with some of the, like, estate planning and power of attorney, things of that nature here in North Carolina. And that's free if the person is a senior. And so sometimes it's just simply directing them that way so that they feel like they're not putting their family in an awkward position. So I would definitely say if they have a close relationship with someone, use that close relationship to their advantage to get as much information as they can.
And definitely, can you give us your contact information, maybe emails, so in case some of us need to, you know, send you some questions via email or your website until we're able to get you on again? And, Felton,
absolutely,
that's pretty much it for me. I do appreciate both of your time, and I just really want to get that contact information because I don't feel that we've reached enough people. And for those listening, please write down this contact information, and we'll get back to you when his next show will come on as well.
Yeah. So, Kareem, if you would share that with our listening audience, how to get in touch
sure.
with you.
Sure. So by telephone, my office number is 910-323-4191. Extension 25. Again, that's 910-323-4191, extension 25. And my email, it's a little bit complicated, but I can break it down for you. So it's K for Kareem, and then my last name, Strong, Strong, at M as in Mary, C as in cat, O as in orange, G as in girl, .org. Again, that's K for kite, and then Strong, Strong, at M for Mary, C as in cat, O as in orange, G as in girl, .org. And honestly, either way is either telephone or email is going to be a good way to reach me. Like I said, if you want to have that conversation with me, you know, where we're actually interacting, you can shoot me an email and just ask me when is a good time, you know, for me to call and leave your contact information, and I can reach out to you, or we can do it through email, whichever way. And then the website to my employer, which is Mid Carolina Area Agency on Aging, is www.mccog.org. And that is, again, like the last portion of my email, the mccog.org, and that brings you straight to Mid Carolina Council of Governments website. And then you can click on Area Agency on Aging, and there's actually a link for Ombudsman, and that'll take you straight to my information.
Kareem, I certainly want to thank you for sharing the valuable information with us and taking the time out of your busy schedule. And we are appreciative of thinkbigradio.com. And again, this is the series of Quality of Life series, Aging Gracefully. This is Felton Wooten, your host. Thank you for joining us tonight. And again, we'll look at when we can schedule Kareem again to give us more information. You also may reach me if you have questions or potential questions for a show. And that's Felton Wooten @gmail.com. Thanks again, Kareem. And for our audience, thank you for joining us tonight.
You're listening to thinkbigradio.com, where big thinkers come to to teach and learn. Your goals are our goals, and your success makes us successful.